More winning is ready for you in September at Remington Park. Racing begins at 6:30 p.m. Wednesday through Saturday. Make your plans now for Oklahoma Derby Day. Sunday, September 29th features the Oklahoma Derby, the Hat and Tie Style Contest for big cash prizes, and the Derby Day Wine Tasting Festival. Oklahoma Derby Day begins at 3 p.m. on September 29th. Visit RemingtonPark.com for group rates, suite rentals, and more. Get more winning excitement in the Remington Park Casino, where the jackpot action never ends. Parking and admission are free at Remington Park.
For racing two-year-olds in California and Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions. And offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action in thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts Breeding Program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner, and breeder, and stallion owner, and developer. It's the best kept secret in racing, till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit massbreds.com.
Whether you're new to the racing game or just looking to enhance your operation, Hermitage Farm and Goshen can help you. We are conveniently located between Churchill Downs and Keeneland Racecourse and near world-renowned equine hospitals. With spacious paddocks, expert staff, and qualified veterinarians, we offer full-service boarding, breeding, and sales preparation, as well as post-operative care and layup services. Visit us in person or online at hermitagefarm.com.
Just minutes from downtown Saratoga Springs, you'll find GMP Farm, a revolutionary state-of-the-art equine therapy and rehabilitation facility offering the most advanced equipment and knowledgeable staff to care for your equine athlete. From oxygen therapy and laser treatments to thermal imaging, dry salt room, and cryotherapy treatment, all alongside a 7/8 mile Tapita training track, GMP Farm is revolutionizing equine care. To see a full list of services and book your horse's rejuvenation session, visit gmpfarm.net today.
Fans, our live meet here at Santa Anita Park will return on Friday, September 27th, and the first ever California Crown Day at Santa Anita will be held on Saturday, September 28th. It is a day that will include the $1 million California Crown Stakes, along with two Grade 2 stakes worth $750,000 each. It will also include premium compound experiences with incredible food and beverage options, along with world-class live musical performances, interactive experiences, and cutting-edge technology. Griffin, Little Yachty, and Shaboozy are just some of the live acts that will be performing. You can get tickets at CaliforniaCrown.com. For additional information regarding our auto meet, go to SantaAnita.com. California Crown Day, Saturday, September 28th. Will be an unforgettable day of world-class racing and world-class entertainment that you will not want to miss here at the great race place, Santa Anita Park.
Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. It's about 20 to the top of the hour. Andy Serling will join us, and we'll do some review. And there's another Thursday carryover at the Big A. So we'll look at that. 53,000 maybe? Something like that, I think. Brian just reaching for Dr. all day. Let me make sure he knows that you're calling. There we go. All right, I let him know, Brian. Different number. Yeah, because we got the Florida number, we got my number, we got Brian's number. Anyway, Andy will join us, and the carryover while we wait for Dr. A. Let's get a number on this, and it's 44,000. There we go. 44,000 on Thursday. Just call him back, Brian. I only sent, right. I only sent you the mobile, so the cell, so. Because sometimes we used to call him in the office, and there's been many a Horse Health Today segment with with Dr. Alday's hands on a horse, right? Between the wind blowing and somebody holding a horse for him as we talk. Now the topic that. The bone bruising topic, and when it comes up, it's one of those sort of nebulous, right? It's one of those sort of terms. You hear it and you think, well, all right, what does that mean exactly? And Dr. Steve Alday joins us. Horse Health Today, brought to you by Luberson and Reborn. Steve, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you this morning?
I'm good. It was kind of just funny that I reached out to you the other day about a friend's dog, and I said, it's been kind of quiet on the horse health topic front, and then no sooner do I say that yesterday one of the trainer guests brings up bone bruising, and we haven't talked about it in years.
No, we haven't. But it's kind of like the weather. It's a
there's always a reason. There's always a good reason to bring it up. And sure. I was waiting for you. I made the suggestion, Steve, that when we hear it, when it shows up in an article about a horse that's been turned out or needs time off, it doesn't really delineate, right? Very rarely do. Does the reference get expanded? So I'd love for you to, give everybody a primer on what it is, how it happens, where it happens, the treatment and effective, return to the racing aspect.
Well, it's a great question, number one, because, for the longest time, it was a little, quote-unquote, nebulous. In other words, we knew it occurred. We didn't realize probably the amount that it occurred, but we would start seeing something simple as, maybe a deficit in performance. Horses wouldn't finish at us, and then they put them back, after a few days off and, galloping, nothing critical here. Rider might say, hey, a little slow change in leads, he crossed by a little bit. You start seeing a few little clinical signs that don't really point to anything in particular, but they're not right, not same horse. Then we start seeing when they gallop, as this goes on and progresses and we get them back into like a maintenance breeze, they tend to show a little bit of a, instead of a big delineation front to back, you remember the crazy cartoon, Pepe Le Pew, he kind of bounced around. Horses get a little bit of a Pepe Le Pew looking gait, meaning that they don't, have that good differentiation, and they tend to be a little bit, the stride is shortened, and they tend to bounce up and down. And the extension and flexion, the things that you normally see with a really good moving horse are become a deficit and basically become a problem where they don't look normal anymore. We'll get a physical done on them. And on the physical, ironically enough, it's not really irony, but it is quite simply that they don't look, you know, they don't show anything in particular. They don't jog that bad on hard surface, but they look really bad on the racetrack. And then all of a sudden, we start seeing a little effusion, maybe in some fetlocks, things like this, but not bad. And they don't flex horrible, but they flex like something bugs them. And we'll even sometimes, you know, hit Gradygraph and do interventions, for, you know, like injections, you know, to try to help out the comfort of the joint and this sort of thing. The fluid's really not that bad and this sort of thing. Well, the ultimate occurrence, with especially with the better quality horses, we send them off for a nuclear scan, bone scan, CAT scan, PET scans, things like this, because they're all available now. Just one second.
Sure. See, I told you, he's he's always out looking at horses. He's got the...
Yeah. No, I just had one thing. Somebody just sent me a message. But anyway, so bottom line is that the first thing we'd use as a tool right away is we saw that the cannons lit up, you know, quite a bit. The uptake was pretty significant. And, you know, we used to go a short period of time off, and some of them would get better, look better, and be fine, and go forward. Others would need more time, and then some didn't get enough time, and they come back, and they, in a short order, maybe one breeze, they're back where they were. Well, what we found now is due to, you know, the better diagnostic tools, and you know, as our ability to detect these things has gone up, we now know that these are the start of microfractures, concussion, some damage to the cartilaginous and the subchondral bone, and meaning the surface, you know, that's in the joint itself, and then the supportive structures behind it. And we're starting to see where these are the predecessors or the signs that the horse possibly could, you know, have like condylars or, let's say, what they call a palmar defect, or even a plantar defect, which would be on the hind limbs. And these things, you know, can be progressive, and they can be in all four limbs simultaneously. And essentially, you know, they're going to need a significant amount of time, at least 90, sometimes as much as 120 days, to let all this build up of damage, essentially, before it becomes, you know, the potential for a fracture and or catastrophic breakdown, that we give them the time for all this to come back together. And in a nutshell, you know, you've gotten, you know, I just went through a horse's career from when he started his three-year-old year until about midway through the summer. And, you know, and this is kind of the way some horses' careers progress. And, you know, the more you keep going on them without, you know, doing the workups or finding out what the problem is, the more likely they are to suffer from potentially, you know, catastrophic breakdown, which, you know, obviously is a sin. If we had the ability to try to stop these things, you know, ahead of time. Now, with expensive horses, you certainly want to spend the money because they're certainly worth it for their genetics and or, you know, their ability to you know, compete at high levels and generate revenue, because now the person... So, bottom line is, you know, in the lesser caliber horses, claimers, things like this, you know, horses that wouldn't be the same caliber, wouldn't generate the same type of income, you know, you don't have to spend all that money. You use common sense, and you know, you realize that this is what the case is, and you give them the time off and allow them to heal. Give them at least 90 days, reevaluate, and then, or 120, and then you're probably going to heal most problems as far as that goes. You know, now the bigger problem is people don't like biting the bullet, being that they've got so much time and money invested in their training to that point, but bottom line is, Steve, is that, you know, it's the only way, you know, you can, you know, preserve these horses' ability to go out and do their job, which, you know, what they're intended for.
Sure.
So, you know, and we're at a juncture now with, you know, Big Brother watching that, you know, hey, they're not going to get past the vets anymore if they've got a predisposed or they got a previous condition or problem. If you, you know, once they get on the radar, and you don't get this taken care of, these horses basically would be banned or barred, you know, from racing. And the word gets out because, you know, they have a central database system, except in a couple of jurisdictions. And, you know, they're not going to be allowed to run if you don't you know, if they're not drug-free and they haven't been evaluated by, you know, an examining vet and watched work. And, they, you know, hopefully, the, you know, can pass all the tests in order to get back into the starting game. So, you know, you potentially could have a horse that, you know, earned millions, you know, and if you can't, you know, jump through the hoops for the powers that be, then he's not going to be a racer. It's really simple.
Steve, in terms of where this typically shows up, I mean, is this a cannon, a radius, a tibia, I mean, up high?
Typically, down, you know, the cannon bones. Cannon bones in the fetlocks. You know, that's the more common. You do have a few exceptions, but they would be a bit of a rarity, you know, like, you know, it's not like a stress fracture, like in a tibia would show as a, but, you know, typically one limb, you know, meaning, you know, I don't remember seeing any horses with a pair of tibias. Personally, it's usually one versus the other. And more commonly, it seems like left than others. But, I mean, I don't know if there's ever been a statistical analysis that determines, you know, I've seen more left than rights, but, you know, maybe the stats say different. But going around a left-hand turn, that would make more sense.
Sure.
Because that limb has to basically be on that lead and take a lot more pressure leading in a turn, whereas the right didn't get quite as much concussion. So,
now you're tripping all kinds of, I got all kinds of thoughts.
It's not a simple deal. I mean, you know, this requires, you know, routine evaluation, and then, you know, you've got to be, you know, are these horses, you know, I mean, you know, this is a dynamic horses, race horses are in a dynamic state of flux. They have to adjust to distances, they have to adjust to speed, they have to adjust to the surface, they have to be sometimes on, you know, something that's hard and dry, you know, and good cushion, sometimes they're sealed and they have to train over, sometimes they're they've gone through, like, they're deeper and looser, they don't have enough moisture in them. You know, the horse has to adjust to a lot of different things on a regular basis. And, you know, it's incumbent upon, you know, the people that train these horses and have them under their care to evaluate them routinely in order to determine, you know, what's going on. And do we have potential for, you know, injuries and or problems? Because that is the bigger problem right now. A lot of horses get scratched. And, you know, you're not going to get away with something that's marginal because they can't afford the risk. And I can't blame them. I mean, I've always erred on that side of caution that way myself.
Is there, because I know there's bone disease, is there supplements and things that can aid, harden the bones? Is this something that, you know, that... calcium leaching
it's not like people with osteoporosis.
Right. That's sort of what I was asking.
You got to remember now, the average horse at the track is, you know, at the either immature 2, 3, 4, and then, you know, maturity is at 5 at the end of, you know, through the 5-year-old year. And then, you know, obviously, lesser tracks, but with a few exceptions, the bigger tracks, you know, older horses don't really make up the bulk of. I mean, most of the horses I look at are 2, 3, 4, 5. I don't really see many much older than that, except for a handful, literally. And the reason why is because that's where the money's made, and that's where the pedigrees are, you know, perpetuated from. You know, that's why you breed a certain horses. You want horses that develop quickly, have a lot of bone, hold up to the training, and show precociousness and performance early. So all of the above, you know, is like, you know, I haven't worked at a track of that nature in a really long time, you know. So, and of course, you know, now being that I'm, you know, more or less semi-retired, I mean, I don't really get to much. I gave up most of my licenses, so I only have Kentucky, New York, and Florida. So, you know, I'm only going to look mainly at younger horses, you know, horses in their 2-year-old year, 3-year-old year, maybe 4, that sort of thing. And that's limited now because I just don't, you know, like I said, I'm, you know, Father Time's catching up with me.
Do horse bones remodel?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, without a doubt, yeah. sure. That's you pick up. Let's say you pick up early on. You'll notice that they have a nice round cannon from the lateral views on ready grass, and then when they get a lot of concussion, that thing gets a little bit pointy. You know, meaning that the subchondral bone basically remodels according to the way the horse travels and the concussion they get and the surface they're training over and this sort of thing. And you've got a quite a variant. Now we have three surfaces that horses will race on. You know, first off, dirt. Second would be poly, and turf obviously would be more prevalent. But poly is in a couple of tracks. And you know, horses are different. I mean, each one gets over differently. That's why that there's the handicappers figure these things out, like yourself. You know that hey, certain pedigrees do well on poly and or turf.
Sure.
And others do well on other types of surfaces. So, you know, and the bigger problem we have is, like, they bring a lot of horses over from Europe here, you know, and that's been a common day occurrence for, you know, quite some time. And I have gone to the sales over there, and the one thing I stay away from, if you find horses have a lot of laxity in their pastures and really drop quite a bit, the bigger problem you have is, unfortunately, even though they may be really effective in Europe, they wouldn't hold up here because they got trained on dirt. And you don't have that option unless you are at a specific facility, and there's only so much room at those places like Fair Hill, things like this, you know, where, so I've looked at horses and vetted them and said, listen, you know, nice individual, too much laxity and too much length in the pasture. Bigger problem you got is, you know, you'll break them down, training them on dirt, getting ready to try to be on the turf where they belong. Okay. And that's the problem. So I try to, you know, and there are exceptions. There's horses that do okay anyway, you know, but as a rule, that's probably a bad move to buy a horse like that you're going to be training on dirt, preparing on dirt, working on dirt, and running on turf, because they won't hold up from the exercise of trying to get to break their maiden, essentially. And that's,
sure,
you know, that's a lot of money, because you're going to pay a lot of money for a good pedigree from Europe to come to the United States to run on turf, no matter what you do.
Is there heat in a bone bruise?
Sure. Yeah, we pick up on it. Yeah, and
okay.
They'll do thermo scans, and they'll see that, you know, they know that this is occurring, and but they can't, you know, like I said, that those things are just, you know, they're using signalment, no different than anything else. And in order to get the real down to the nitty gritty and get down to the meat of the matter, you need to go ahead and do the scans. You need to Duke scan, PET scan, CAT scan, these things, and see what's going on the end of these cannon bones. And they'll see, you know, that they'll see demonstrable changes. You know, things that we never could have picked up on ready grass. That's a fact. You know, because John Madison's practice in Ocala, they started using CAT scans, like, before anybody regularly that I was aware of. And they picked up on some stuff that was amazing to me. And it's good to see, you know. I mean, you know, medicine is like everything. It's got to progress. You know, that's how we stay ahead of the problems before they become bigger problems.
Exactly. Preventative. Finally, in terms of diet and supplement and that kind of, is there ways to either augment or speed healing?
Not really. You know, these things, if you've had a good balanced calcium phosphorus ratio diet when these things are developing, growing, both, you know, as when they first start, you know, creep feeding the mares when they're in fall, and then once these things basically are growing through their biggest growth periods, obviously from yearlings, weanlings to yearlings, yearlings to 2-year-olds. I mean, you see these things will achieve, you know, somewhere on the order by the end of the 2-year-old year, like, you know, 80 to 80+% of their mature size. You're not going to make bone, like size of bone, the amount of bone, better, but the density, yeah, you can certainly help dietarily. But past, you know, into the 3- and 4-year-old year, that sort of thing, you know, and when they get the concussion, it's not going to make that much difference. You really need to, you know, everything that's gone into the bone has pretty much been done before, up through their 2- into the 3-year-old year, and then after that, it's just they put on mass. So the mass basically hopefully won't, you know, overcome or be too much for the amount of bone that the horse has. And, you know, this does happen. You get horses that are extremely precocious at 2, They're a little fine bone. They show speed because they have a big, large muscle mass. It gets heavier, more muscular. The muscle, the bone doesn't change, and it doesn't get bigger or stronger. And you eventually end up chipping and having saucer fractures, things like this, because the amount of mass that this bone is carrying at high speed is not enough for the structure, is not enough for the amount of the engine, so to speak. I would liken it to basically having a Ferrari engine and Volkswagen tires. You know, you just don't have the things to hold up, unfortunately.
Right, the suspension system just doesn't...
it can't take the amount of speed it's got.
Yep,
yeah.
Exactly. Well, as they say, the slow ones don't get hurt.
Well, that's true. The truer words were really never spoken, because, you know, when I look at horses and they're clean-legged and they're bred out to wing-yang, you know, and they're not doing any good, you know, I say, no, man, this horse obviously can't run fast enough to hurt himself.
Exactly.
You know, so that's how it goes.
I love it. Dr. Stephen Allday, everybody. Horse Health Today, brought to you by Lubricin and Reborn. And, Doc, this was great. Great to
always
have
a pleasure, Steve. Always a pleasure.
So appreciative. Yes. Dr. Allday, folks. Talk soon. 19 years of consultation with one of the greatest, certainly of his generation, but one of the greatest racetrack practitioners of all time. And one of the greatest racetrack pundits of all time, Andy Serling, is going to join us next. And actually, Brian, I can't remember. Last week? No, you weren't working last week. So, so you need, right? Although you might, do you have it from OTB days? Maybe. Maybe not. No. All right. Here it comes. There you go. That is Andy. We're going to talk to Andy about the weekend, and there's lots, actually. I got a full agenda for Andy Serling. Good morning.
You have a full agenda. I probably should hang up now.
Yeah, you might want to escape while the getting's good. Well, I want to do some recapping of the weekend. I want to look at the carryover, and I want to look ahead to the stakes card on Saturday.
It sounds like pretty exciting for you.
It is, and for the listeners, because we do it all for the listeners.
Okay.
I haven't given everybody the cross country essentially was the four races. The stakes, and of course that included the botched situation with the turf, but 4,800 almost for the cross country with that allowance at Aqueduct. But Andy, let's start with the two features and at Philadelphia, and thoughts about Torpedo Anna and Seize the Grays wins.
I don't know. I mean, Torpedo Anna didn't run particularly well. She still won. I mean, she got a perfect trip. And, you know, she ran her worst race of the year. She still won and got a 93 buyer. And I guess the question that people have to ask themselves going to the Breeders' Cup is if they think it's just a sort of natural that horses don't always run their best races, and she's allowed one sort of semi-clunker relative to, you know, how she's run. And, you know, keep in mind, Holly Gunfeld's a bad horse, and, you know, she ran very well. And, you know, if you're saying she ran, you know, I don't think that Fearman ran badly. She just ran worse than she normally does. And we've grown to expect such a high level of performance from her that this was a subpar effort. So given the strong campaign that she's had, I understand that there will be some people that will say, well, you know, it wasn't the race that we've grown to expect from her, blah, 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 blah. You know what I mean? So I think that there will be some people, I'm sorry, I'm sort of losing my train of thought. It's fair to ask the question of whether or not you think this is indicative of what we're going to see from her going forward or if she's going to bounce back and run her usual good race in the Breeders' Cup. She runs her good race in the Breeders' Cup. She's one of three likely winners, right, between Idiomatic and Adair Manor. I'm not sure she necessarily is a real favorite to beat Adair Manor if that one runs her best race, and especially with it being on her home court.
Right.
So this just race just raises some questions, I think, for people, right? It shows that there's a little bit of a crack in the veneer. Is that fair?
It is. It totally is. I mean, she's had a full aggressive campaign, which we all applaud, right? I mean, the Travers try.
It is what it is. It doesn't matter. We don't need to kiss up all the time. It is what it is. Whether you applaud it or you look at whatever. She's had the campaign. She's had it. I'm going to look at it from the standpoint of handicapping and not worry about everybody's feelings all the time. You know, I mean, I thought that, you know, I know Kenny had an unnecessarily defensive response to a tweet from Acacia where she just sort of asked the question of what people thought. And she's not me. She's actually nice all the time. And I thought it was a little bit jumping on it. I think people are allowed to have opinions, and our opinions aren't personal insults to horses or trainers, you know. And I think I know that I'm not sick and tired of it. I'm just putting up for so long. You know, the whiny owners that think because you don't pick their horses, you somehow don't like them or something. And it's like, I know the world revolves around all these people. So everything that happens must be somehow related to somebody's feelings about them. I've had owners complain to me and I say, I don't even know who you are and I don't know what horses you own. So, you know, the fact remains that she didn't run her usual terrific race. She's so good, she's held to a higher standard. And I know the race she ran Saturday wouldn't have beaten Idiomatic or Adair Manor. So the question is whether or not you're confident she could run back to those really good races she's run earlier. I don't have a pretty poor opinion on it either way right now. Is that fair?
No, it's perfect.
I don't mind. Why should I have an opinion right now? I'll worry about it in a month.
Yeah, but no, you that which is yeah. I'm not asking you know for
yeah. No, I know you're not. As far as Keith the Gray. Big day for my racehorse. Another race that was filled with pace where everybody decided to race. I'm guessing that the Junmont horse, part of trying to rate, considering they got right at the rail, was concerns that being wide was going to hurt them because it was I don't think it was the strongest inside bias I've ever seen, but it was clearly an edge to being inside at Parks, just going through the results. It's clearly, it wasn't a huge gold rail, but it certainly was advantageous. And I think they worried about being stuck outside the whole way. But as a result, the pace ended up being crawling, and we know that Seize the Gray under, you know, a biased racetrack with a moderate pace is capable of running well. So he had his day, his second day of the year. It's the second race that he's run a fast race. I know he won the Pat Day Mile, but that wasn't a race that's going to get him anything in any other in any big races. And, you know, congrats to Lucas, and he's got two big grade one wins, so this race being a grade one wasn't certainly complimented by this year's field, and he has no chance in the Breeders' Cup. But hopefully he shows the speed that he usually shows, unlike the race he ran in the Jim Dandy, because at least then maybe he'll ensure an honest pace, something we haven't seen in the last couple of, you know, big three-year-old races.
Well, and it's going to be interesting to see what Lucas does classic or mile-wise, too, because...
Well, he has no chance to either one, but they can run where they want.
Yeah. He's not committing anytime soon to.
Wayne, you know, passing the classic.
No, I know. I right.
That's very un-Wayne-like to me.
Right. Exactly. We'll see. I just had. Before Dr. Alday, actually, I had Jose D'Angelo, and we talked about that Ben Tornato.
Let's not talk about any other races from that day. I like Jose, but I'm not interested. I didn't watch the races. I don't know who these horses are, Steve.
I don't know. Well, with the Vosburgh coming Saturday, it's just, you know, kind of...
He'll be back in a week?
No, he's not going to be back in a week. But I'm just keeping an eye on the... On the sprint division, essentially.
I think we know the sprint division is. Well,
I think it's going to be a better. I think it's going to be better than you.
I think it might be a fun race.
Yeah,
but I mean, sprint division and listen, run. You know, the mile giving horses an alternative around the mile has and will continue to hurt the sprint. There's no question about it.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there are a lot of horses that connections think they want more distance. I think trainers worry too much about less distance, but that's just what I think. But, I mean, Milliken certainly has put himself in a position to be one of the top horses. I'm sure the Chosen Brawn, even though he lost last time, got a lot of attention to the race being out in California. Who beat him last time? Oh, that horse of Doug O'Neill's, who's fast.
The horse that ran
the fast race on Derby Day, right. Yeah, he could be the favorite. I don't know. I could be wrong, but I'm guessing the Breeders' Cup winner won't come out of the Vosburgh. Having said that, there is one of the most entertaining horses of all time in the Vosburgh. The 6-year-old gelding Comedy Town. Now, I do understand, and I don't necessarily disagree with some people that might say, well, this horse just improved because it was claimed by Sappy Joseph. But the first race this horse ran for Sappy was the same kind of, you know, mediocre, crappy race he ran his whole career on synthetic. It wasn't until he went to the dirt that he blossomed. So you could say it had to do with Sappy, but it clearly had to do with the dirt. And it made me wonder, how many times do you think Mike Trombetta had him early, right? And then Mike Maselli ended up with him? I'd love to know how many times he scratched when races were rained off the turf.
Instead of taking a chance and running him on
had
main
they run
track.
Him on the dirt, had he been scratched, in all likelihood, he would have been a stakes winner much earlier in his career.
Yeah.
I mean, it's incredible improvement. He was a pretty good horse at one time on the turf. Possibly he was always better on the dirt, right?
Absolutely.
It is a pretty remarkable. I mean, his PPs are pretty remarkable.
And I just, yeah, here we go.
There's life. I have his last 12 running lines in front of him.
Me too. Yeah, as soon as he abandoned the poly and the turf, career bests.
Amazing what he's done.
He did run, you know, I'm just looking at the buyer. You know, he had six.
Well, he had that one, that sort of stick out 98 buyer off the claim for Mike Maselli to 5 furlong and Laurel Dash. Having said that, remembering that race, he was more of a 90-ish buyer and plenty of times ran less. You know, he was okay. He was a second dancing buck in Saratoga looking at him. Obviously, this is a horse that should have been endured his entire career. I wonder what his damn side is. Let me look at this damn side. Oh, Jesus.
Unbridled humor, Mrs. Weber.
Do you find that when you leave Formulator open for a long period of time, you can't get data from it?
Yes.
The open PP?
Yes.
Okay. Well, the dam is all turf. Graham trained her. Now, the second dam was very good in the dirt. And the siblings, they ran okay in the dirt, like Wild Medagliadoro. I remember this horse. This was, well, maybe a little better on turf, but not a lot better. There's one that only ran on turf and synthetic. In Super Watson, another one, turf and synthetic. The only one in their foal that really ran with any kind of regularity on the dirt. Amazing. Anyway, Spice Tattle. Incredible Sires, Spice
Tattle. Yes, he was. Yes, he was.
Incredible Sires ever. They ran on dirt, they ran on turf, they ran on everything. Long, short, didn't matter. Anyway.
And Munnings is getting the same kind of results.
That's fair.
Since we went in this direction, let's transfer into looking ahead to Saturday. Then we'll circle back to Thursday's carryover. But the rest of that Vosburgh, it's kind of interesting. Baby Yoda, who actually, even though people think he's a...
You haven't looked at the race, so why don't I talk about it? Because Baby Yoda is your first horse you went to, you're not handicapping the race.
Well,
I think it's interesting that Scotland is back. He might have gotten sick after he won that race up there because he didn't work out for over a month after the race, but he's had four works, and he ran very well that day. And Dean Delivers is the control in speed. He does have that one decent race in Saratoga. He finished third behind Lee Power and Gunite and Vanderbilt last year. They look like the major three.
Nacho Correas has got that third-time U.S.
If we're going to talk about the races... Talking about horses that are the fifth and sixth choices, we can do it, but
what that effort, that seventh
how
long
much
effort
time have you
was
spent looking at this roster? I'm just curious.
I looked at who's
before
in it.
You started the call with me.
No, I when the PPs went up, I printed those.
Yeah, Notches was ran fast last time. He's unlikely to win here, but I'd be happy for us for Notches.
Right. Well, then jump to the Woodward, and we should mention that K Army, the Chilean that they've been looking forward to seeing, is going to scratch out of here.
Oh, so you're already down to four.
Yes.
Oh, I see scratching. Not good.
Bill Mott did not specify to Dave Grenning.
That's
static. So it's Skippy, Longstocking, Croupy, Tappet Trice, and Mask Parade. Is
we talk about the 1988 Woodward instead.
They're gonna have to chase Skippy Longstocking. The Turf Classic though, Andy, Turf Classic I had Christoph yesterday. And
what?
I had Christoph on yesterday.
How'd that go?
Very well. I mean, I don't know if you saw the numbers I put up since
yes,
he won.
I did see your sign up to Christoph. I thought it was really touching. No, I didn't.
Yeah.
I didn't realize it coincided with a visit to the show.
It did.
That's really big. So, in other words, we had to revise that Christoph's a really good trainer. sorry for him. Farbridge drew terribly in here. And, you know, for a horse that really needs to be inside of his best running, he had a day in the Sword Dancer. I always liked that horse. And I like Christoph. Good luck to him in here.
Well, Christoph actually talked about the draw, and I don't think it's 100% certain that he's going to run.
Oh, good. Maybe we can scratch this one down to four, too.
Well, Warlike got us back against the boys, won this, of course, last year, and Silver Knot, et cetera.
When she won it last year, it was a bog. So while she's obviously a major player in here, she was really helped by the course condition last year. Unfortunately, we still seem to be in that weather pattern this year. Silver Knot's got to bounce back from his last race. It certainly exposed him a bit. You know, he was a little dressed up off his prior race where he rode a very good rail in the controlling position. He was bad last time, but he's run well enough in the past that I don't have a problem with anyone thinks he's, if not the horse, to be one of the main horses to beat along with the filly and the mare. I think Emmanuel's a little interesting in here. You know, he got just a unfortunate, I don't know what the plan was in the United Nations, but I don't know why he was as far back as he was at that distance. And I think he's a horse that could benefit by being more forward. So I don't know if there's a fly in the ointment, it's him. Well, I don't have a big knock on while I got a silver knot. And I like Farbridge. And I can find a way to get him over the inside. And Joel's good, then I think he has a chance to win. I don't think his last race was a completely aberrant effort. He ran well in other races, and he had no chance to trip in the United Nations, where he's wide the whole way around against the gold rail. So I don't think he's impossible to win from here. I just think drawing that post makes his life much more difficult. He drew an inside post, though he wouldn't have been the speed in here, at least he could have been in his comfort zone. He's a quirky horse.
The fourth feature, the Grade Two Pilgrim, where the two-year-olds trying to win their way to Del Mar.
What do you think?
Well,
it's a huge favorite, right?
Zulu Kingdom.
I mean, Little Kingdom is way the worst to beat, and I'm not looking to take a massive shot against him, but I would say he had a very, very, very good trip when he won last time out, which I think makes him a little bit vulnerable in here. I mean, I think he's much more likely to win than Concord Green, who probably is the second choice. who also got an extremely fortunate trip. He had a pace that was contested, but also saved ground the entire way before angling out late. Broke a little slow, and he overall had a superior trip on a strong rail when the rails were down. I thought that Noble Confessor, the maiden, was actually a little interesting in the air trial turf for the first time. Didn't think he was impossible. But he and Zulu Kingdom were the two likeliest winners.
Where's the pace coming from in here, Ed?
The rail.
Yep, I can see that.
Well, he's not in front of you. He fell down coming out of the gate. Or they gave him horrible, made a horrible decision.
Yeah, because it is funny to look at a set of PPs like this and virtually not see anybody in their
welcome to racing. I mean, one race after another. Was the Noble Damsel we ran past weekend?
Yes.
I don't know how we got here, Steve, but here we are. It's funny that nobody wants to have speed. Their horses, and the only thing that wins is speed. So I don't get it. Anyway, you want to let the carryover Thursday?
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay.
Let me hold on. Let me reach for the. Let's see. There we go.
I mean, Beautiful Pete is the horse to beat in the first leg by a lot. Maybe some other places to go, but she's way the worst to beat. I thought Aunt Yola would run better. She wanted a little bit of a price in there. You've got all these horses that don't want to win, like Literary. It's a quick power nap. These are just not winning types. And their lack of speed doesn't help them either. So I would think four is the as a big lean in the air, people may want to find some other horses somewhere.
Well, hold on. You jumped past the third.
Well, it's an 8-race card. Oh, right. Oh, sorry. I prefer Dave Bright Delights. I thought ran really well last time. I preferred him over horses like Amplitude, your Scrappy, and Patronage. I think I covered the ones you're going to take money, right?
Yeah.
Sorry, I forgot his name, race card. The fifth race. Well, I guess Sendero will be a pretty heavy favorite here, right? There will be some people betting on maybe giving Nikki Braintrust another chance. I'm not. I bet her last time. I thought she was awful. Hang on a second. I mean, there's kind of an interesting horse in this race. I mean, I don't think you really looked at it, but there's a very interesting horse in this race, right? You there?
Yeah.
Is there not an interesting horse in this race? Or have you not looked?
The D'Angelo.
The interesting horse in the race is the four.
The D'Angelo.
I mean, this horse was 32-1. A New York bred debuted at Delaware 32-1 and was essentially eased. Switches to Jose D'Angelo, and Irad Ortiz has signed not to ride. That's a little interesting to me, and so I think that's sort of a wise guy. I don't know, it's a weird thing. That's a fast work at Monmouth. This seems to be the wise guy horse of the week, so certainly be at my tickets. Not like Sendero and Nikki Braintrust do a whole lot for me. I mean, this is a pretty hungry crew, huh?
Yeah. I get, yeah, it's one of those.
Hey, Wayne Haas to wake up on the outside. His horses have been very live.
digital currency, and then you got a firster in here.
Yeah, probably not much worse. Anyway.
Well, gets us to the stake, the Hettinger, the late John Hettinger.
Yeah, well, it's a mile and eight, right? And that's a little bit of a question mark. Silver Skillet obviously just got one of the most puzzlingly bad rides I've seen all year last time out. But is she really a mile and eight horse, right? Whereas a horse like Marvelous Maud and What Love Looks Like are more mile and eight type horses. The problem is they're not that good. And I know that Marvelous Maud finally sort of showed some life again after she seemed to have just completely fallen off last time. I'm just not sure how much I like that race overall, and so I decided to go in a different direction and pick Can't Fool Me, who may not be good enough, but I thought she really improved last time out. And who knows, maybe she's just getting better, and I kind of wanted a new face, the ones I'm kind of sick of looking at.
Hmm.
So I said her over Silver Skillet, Marvelous Maud, and What Love Looks Like.
That's my story,
I'm sticking with it. Exactly. And the 7th is a bit of a war. I think you would agree.
And, yeah.
I think the horse to beat is Lightning 7, getting back to a one-turn mile. I'm not going to hold the met against him. It was on Belmont Stakes Day when horses really weren't picking up ground. And I think he's really better at a mile. We've seen the Full Streams run well since that race they ran together. So I thought he was sort of logical. Unbiled Bomber is kind of a bomb that might have a shot in this race. I treated Shuttle with life last time, though I'm not confident he's ever capable of winning again. But he did show life last time, so I'd probably throw him in. I don't like Rocket Cam. He couldn't win last time and beat me here. And we can wrap it up in the 8th. With, I picked Be There. I thought Be There ran a winning race last time. They're not racing because Egyptian Quest, who was third, came back and was horrible last week, but the winner ran a 72, ran an 80 and a 92 in his next start. And other horses have improved out of the race last time. Now, this is an interesting horse because he looks like a big career loser, but is he really a loser going short in the turf? So his race is going short in the turf, make him better than this field. And I thought he ran very well last time. I'm not sure I'm supposed to really love him here. You know, I thought he certainly ran better than Sassy Alley did, the filly against the boys. Betagogo's obviously the one turf race was okay behind Typhoon Fury, but this was a little bit better. And we got a first year for Clement as well as Reverend Moon, but I'm not a big Reverend Moon fan, but he was running against a much better field last time. I don't know where else I was supposed to go, unless you think that Linda Rice horse is suddenly going to run a lot better, which I suppose is possible.
That's the 8, Liberté de Bayou.
Yeah, but that seems like a hard race to close it out. It's not, these sequences are not easy, and I can't speak for everybody else, but I was lost last week. I mean, there were a lot of horses were winning, especially turf routes that I thought were very hard to make. And I found the results to be very difficult.
Well, I'll tell you what amazed me. How about Saturday, Andy, that after two big-priced horses, that there was that horse to take the pool down. And
well,
promptly...
I assume somebody hit it on a $2 or $4 ticket, throwing the numbers or something. I mean, I don't
right?
think it's always possible it was part of a very small play. I mean, a very big play, and it was a small ticket on that, but I don't buy that. I mean, that ticket, which you may not realize, though I tweeted out, is that the person who had the winning ticket was also going to take down the entire console pool with 9 of the other 11 horses. So it doesn't really make sense to me that it was part of a bigger play.
Hmm.
I think it may have been a quick pick numbers play. I haven't asked them to look into it, but I will. but it just doesn't make any sense. You know, I mean, the pick five, they buy five times as much for a dollar. Pick five. It was a 20% of the parlay. It was just ridiculous. There's a sophisticated pick six players that put real money in are going to shy away from betting combinations where the odds are significantly higher than the amount of money in the pool. And it's not because it's mathematically unsound. Yes, it's, but the side note is there are better ways to make money in the pools by combining those horses than to put in the pick six. So it's a horrible way to spend your money. So I don't think there was any sophistication. It was probably just could have been somebody's license plate number for all I know. You know what I mean? It just or a quick pick. It just doesn't make sense.
I was amazed when they
yes, we were all amazed.
But, like, wow.
But you have to understand something. If that ticket hadn't been bought, there would have been three horses live for five, and nine of them alive for four. Nobody had five besides the winning ticket on nine Crazy. Of the other horses. So it was a very aberrant situation. Doesn't mean it's not going to happen once in a blue
sure.
moon, but it seemed to happen here. I would have been curious to see if it would have been hit on Sunday. It was not an easy situation with that Bruce Brown horse winning, you know?
Well, you know, I said to Dave? It was to Nick Tamro. That first week of cards on a daily basis, they've been good. They've been deep.
They have been very good cards. I've just found it. It's a funny thing because if you looked at my ROI, it's fine, you know, because I've had some winners on top of logical type courses, but I've been completely lost in a lot of races. A lot of surprising winners. I mean, yeah, I guess the Surfy horse that won the last race on Sunday was my fifth choice, but it was a stretch to make the fifth choice. The only reason it was there because the horse was against the track in that turf race, in the six furlong race, but I don't know. That was not an easy horse to have. And it didn't figure to be the speed over the nine, but the ten, but they sort of left. It's fair. There have been a lot of difficult results. At least in my opinion, there have been. And there have been some obvious ones too, but I haven't. Since I hit that pick five, I've been terrible. My gambling's been awful. Mm-hmm. It happens. It's racing, but the racing's been fine as long as the weather's good. The racing in the fall was good in New York.
Well, looking forward. I'm coming down Thursday night, and
what's going on this weekend?
We're running on Friday.
Well, running is an operative word. I bet that horse last time. I would definitely not call what that horse did running.
He's moving to the grass, which probably is what he's wanted, and looking forward to it.
Well, to eat it or run on it?
He's a Motown.
That's exactly a huge turf pedigree.
It's
his last race was so disappointing because he actually had run a little bit in the second start.
Yeah, he did. He did.
Yeah. It was atrocious in an atrocious field last time, unfortunately. Well, good luck. You going to come visit?
Yeah.
What race is he in?
The fourth. I'll do the show from Aqueduct.
Does Donnie know? Maybe that's why he was in so much last week, getting ready for you to come down.
No, actually, he doesn't. I got to make...
You want to give him a little warning?
I will. Although, you know, the lines, I don't even need those anymore. I can Wi-Fi it.
Oh, really?
That's yeah.
Where are you going to do the show from?
I thought the press box. Yeah.
Wow, dude. Have you there?
I know.
Can I warn him?
Well, I was texting with him last night. He, you know, he was watching his beloved Washington football team. And he
Does
was...
Does McKenna know you're coming?
Not yet, no.
Have you considered telling him?
I'll tell him. Yeah, yeah. I don't want to give him a lot of advance warning because he gets excited and
you know. I may tell him it will not allow you to come to the forum if he's a week in advance.
I can do it. I can do it from the parking lot.
You can live. Do it from like from Resort World.
Yeah, exactly. Live from Conduit Avenue.
Well, hopefully I'll see you.
Yes.
I'm on until 3:30, but I'm off for a little while after that. If you're around.
All right. Well, I there's a real chance. I think Tina's going to Rochester, so I think I might hang around Friday night and come for the steak Saturday.
Wow. Whew. That's increased attendance.
Such an asshole.
You like an autograph signing? All right, I'm going to go. Who's your next victim?
Doug Cowens.
Okay. Wish you my best.
I will.
See you later.
Andy Serling, everybody. I won't tell Doug that Andy's pushing for the Breeders' Cup Classic. Yeah, Doug is going to join us next, and I will ask him. Yes, and all of you, you can. I'll ask him for you because, as you know, I'm not one that tries to direct connections in any particular direction. Right? It's their horse. It's their property. They can choose to run where they want. But it's a great story. I was aware of that. And now you do. All right? Beautiful. I'm just reaching for the. There it is. All right. I was of a mind that there was potential for Doug to hit the eighth, ninth double between next, and then he was sending out Injunction, and Injunction got bet appropriately, ended up as second choice behind Coastal Mission, and I'm not going to say that Coastal Mission. He was 5-2. He didn't seem like 5-2 to me when I handicapped. I'll tell you that, Coastal Mission. But he did take the money and ended up at 3-2. And you know who? It's funny, Mikey Arrow. Mike Arrow, before this race, said that he wanted to bet between the Dirt Mile. He wanted to bet Repo Rocks, and I thought Injunction was the right play. And I think we've got Doug Cowens now. Doug, good morning.
How are you, Steve?
I'm good. I was explaining that I was looking for the Doug Cowens double between the eighth and the ninth race. Injunction had a good look in there. Ran okay.
Yeah, I was looking for that same double, Steve. It just didn't work out.
Well, listen, when you've got the best, you got the best endurance horse, the best distance horse in the country. Sometimes you just say, "All right, that we're doing fine with him." No, that's a nice horse, Injunction. And this was, I was talking about it yesterday, those high price claims, invariably they work out pretty good.
You know, those are the kind of claims I'm looking for, just to get us to the spots that we've found for these guys, sometimes they work out, sometimes they don't. This one seems to have worked out as well.
He's a 6-year-old, and so, he's only made 23 starts, so, you got a better feel for him. Obviously, you've been looking at him, since May, and he hasn't run a bad race, and he's got to win a second and a third and three stakes for you.
Yeah, he's gotten a little unlucky, too. At Ellis, he got caught a little wide, and hooked a tough horse in Saudi Crown, and then the other day, you know, he really likes the one-turn mile the best. You know, the two-turn mile seems to be a little bit harder on him, and, you know, he drew an inside post on a deep track at this weekend and got pressured the whole race. He never got a breather at all, and I think that kind of cost him at the end there just a little bit.
You know, we'll talk about it as part of the discussion with Next, who's also a six-year-old. I had Wayne Lucas yesterday, and Wayne said that when they went out, when he walked out onto the track apron, because they had to take the picture out, you know, out on the dirt, he said he couldn't believe, he didn't realize how deep that track was until he went out there. And now you're the second person to mention how deep and tiring the park's main track was Saturday.
Yeah, you know, I walked over with the first horse that ran, and I was like, boy, they can, I don't think they can get enough water on this track as deep and cuppy as it was. But, yeah, I was a little shocked at how deep it was as well. Seemed like it was a little more deeper on the rail as well. I don't know if that's because the track's crowned there or what, but it seemed to be a little bit deeper down inside.
Well, nothing stops Next. Let's shift gears and talk about his defense of the Greenwood Cup, and has now won seven straight?
Seven straight, yes, sir. So, you know, he got the... after I walked over with him, I was happy that he had an outside post where he could... I let them do whatever they wanted inside there and just kind of stalk the pace and do his thing when he was ready to go. And, you know, we've learned, too, the horse doesn't need to bring the track to himself. He takes it, whatever he's got. He don't mind if it's...
Machado gets along with him so well, Doug, and, you know, you can just... You can see that he's relaxed, but that he's also he also is engaged, right? He's not necessarily a horse that just switches off. You can see that he could really take the lead any time.
You know, one of the keys to the horse is to get him to get off the bridle just a little bit, and it takes just a minute with the horse. And you know, he'll get the tugging just a little bit on Machado, but once he gets off the bridle, then he's in that rhythm that he gets into, and he just kind of waits for his cue at that point.
As you watch him, I mean, at this point, you know, you know how he's traveling. You know, last year in this race, he won by 25 lengths. It was interesting to see a couple of different horses take runs at him. And sort of, you know, get up to him, and then, you know, Machado lets it out a notch, and you know, those horses kind of fall away. He just gallops everybody into the ground.
Well, he's unique in the way that he can run them off their feet early and late.
Right.
Not many horses can do that, and that's what makes him so deadly. And, you know, if a couple horses want to go to the lead, he'll let them go and kind of put a little pressure to keep them going, and if nobody wants the lead, he can take the lead and then slow everything down. So he's super dangerous, and that's why he's a good marathon horse.
Well, marathon is a key differentiation, I guess, as part of this as part of this conversation, because you knew when I reached out to you that at some point the question's going to come. I mean, people, as he's piling up these wins, Doug, they're more and more eager to see him, you know, face off against the handicap division.
Yeah, that's not so easy, though, for the horse, just because, you know, to do that, he's going to have to give up either surface or distance. You know, you're going to have to switch him over to the grass to keep the distance, or we're going to have to shorten him down to stay on the dirt. And I don't know that either one of those is a good thing for the horse. So, you know, we just have to see where this takes us. You know, we get the horse home here and get him back into his routine and get him up to a breeze, and then have some conversations.
And
And obviously, Michael Foster, who also owns Injunction, I mean, enjoying this ride with this horse. And, I say all the time, I'm not somebody that is going to tell anyone what to do with their horse. But he's won so many fans. We've talked about it a couple of times. And it's the natural curiosity, Doug, for people to say, let's see him face, let's see him face the classic handicap types next. So they're it'll be well received if and when you do it.
Yeah. I don't know. I thought maybe you on the radio show could reach out and get us a race written on Breeders' Cup Day, get the Thoroughbred Caroline brought back, and then we'd know exactly where we were going.
Well, and I was disappointed about that too. I mean because I think earlier in the year we assumed that it was going to be there.
That was the end goal, and kind of always assumed that it would be there, but for whatever reason they don't want to have it.
Well, meanwhile, you're picking the spots absolutely, brilliantly, and the calendar sort of writes itself for him.
Yeah, the calendar does write itself for him, and if we opt that we don't want to go out to the Breeders' Cup, then we'll put him away right now, and we'll have him ready to go in March, and he'll make the Temperance Hill for the first time if that's the way we decide to go, and then he'll kick back into these same four races that he had done this year and last year.
Nice. And from what you can see and from what we're all seeing, this has taken nothing out of him.
It appears that it doesn't take much out of the horse. The trips do take a little bit out of him. He's run. He made two back-to-back trips to New York, and when he got back on the second trip, he was a little, I don't want to say he was down, but took him a minute to kind of bounce back, and it didn't take a real long time. Shortly, a second breed or so, he was right back where he normally is, ready to go for parks. So it does take a little bit, the shipping does, out of him.
Well, the amazing thing that we've said, as these stories have materialized, two sons of Not This Time, Cogburn and Next, they both switch surfaces and they both take off. Cogburn as the best turf sprinter maybe that America's ever produced, and Next, who's clearly as good a stayer as we've seen in ages. It's an amazing thing that the versatility of his progeny, obviously, to produce these two horses.
Oh, I think that we're going to look back in time here and realize that he might be one of the greatest sires we'll ever see. And, a lot of that probably comes from the Giant Causeway line there.
Sure.
Getting the turf and the long distance and this horse can sprint too, the other horse. So Cogburn's amazing sprinter on the grass. So get any kind of horse out of Not This Time.
And of course, Dale Roman's, he said this all along. The horse, he hadn't covered a single mare. And Dale said he's going to be one of the greatest sires ever. And looks like Dale, might have been right about it this time.
Looks like he was right on with that one.
I love it, right? I got the greatest story to tell you, actually. There's a few other horses we should talk about, too. But I was at Kentucky Downs with Patrick Lewis. And Patrick had a friend, Doug Arnold Jr., Buck Pond. And when your name came up and we were talking about, we're talking about Next, and I think you were running, maybe might have been the day of Barberini or Pack a Lunch. It was that weekend. And your horsemanship was just being lauded, Doug, because Doug, the story that Doug Arnold told was that at some point his dad said, you know, this guy Cowens, he keeps coming to the sale and he buys our best horse like every year. And not necessarily the most expensive horse, but the horse that Buck Pond felt was, you know, the nicest horse they bred that year. And so after a while, he said, why don't we start sending this guy horses?
Yeah, I recently picked up a few horses for Doug and them from buying a horse here and there off of them at the sales, and been lucky enough to pick some homebred that they've bred and done well with them.
Well, I thought it was a great story because, you know, for somebody that, you know, has been training for a good long while and you know, you became something of a household name this year because of this horse, and that was the same kind of revelation that, you know, that the Arnolds had is, you know, this guy's obviously pretty sharp. We should start sending him horses. I got the biggest kick out of it.
Well, hopefully hopefully we can come up with a next for him out of there.
I love it. I love it. What? Give us a couple. Actually, I want to talk to you about a couple of horses too, because you've had some recent maiden breakers, and there was the horse actually out of the Ellis Derby that I don't think we even talked about the last time we talked in Junction. Not This Boy.
Yeah, Not This Boy is a nice 3-year-old, and you know, the Ellis Park Derby kind of zapped him a little bit, so we've been just kind of been easy with him and getting him back on a breed schedule and getting him back where he was and getting him sharp again. And I'm not sure where this will take us at the moment because a lot of the 3-year-old stakes are over right now, so you might see him show up in a 2X there at Keeneland or Churchill here at the end of the year.
He's obviously with that name. That's another Not This Time.
Yeah, this is another Not This Time that looks like he's going to be a dirt router too at the end of the day here. And I think time is on his side. As you know, I think the older he gets, the better he's probably going to get. And I kind of knew that as a 2-year-old as well. That's why I'd only ran him one time and kind of put him away, and then brought him back. He's had a great 3-year-old season so far, and I think that the horse will even keep on maturing and get a little bit better the older he gets.
Well, he got beat by a nice Brad Cox, Gary West homebred, and this is a horse that. Tell me about the client, actually, Zimmer Ridge.
Yeah, the horse is owned by the defensive coordinator of the Cowboys, Mike Zimmer, and he came to me to train the horse. He had it in Minnesota when he was up there as the head coach.
Sure.
And he lives here in northern Kentucky and reached out to me, and lives fairly close to me and wanted to be close to the horse. So we made a good connection there, and we've hit it off since I've had the horse for him.
Well, and how long? We've met Mike a few times, and saw him last not this year, but the year before at Oaklawn. He'll show up at Oaklawn during the winter. You know, after whatever team gets is knocked out. But so he'll have plenty of time this year. The the cowboy hater in me, just you can't stop that stuff, Doug. Sorry, but when did he start using the Zimmer Ridge name? I've not seen that.
Well, here in northern Kentucky, he's got a farm out there, and that's name of the farm. So
interesting.
He's kind of rolled along with the farm name there.
Interesting, because I mean, he's had horses off and on for years. But I didn't think it was under that name. But very cool. All right, so here's a horse to keep track of. Not This Boy. Very nice. Well, This is why we have these conversations. How many more babies do you have to run?
We got several two-year-olds that are kind of creeping up on races here that haven't gotten started this year, and so hopefully we'll get a few started here at Keeneland and maybe a few more there at Churchill before they end, and hopefully something will show up here and look like it has something.
Well, you've only got a couple of, there's one, you got one running at Belterra on Thursday and one at Thistledown on Friday, so there's really nothing, unless you got something that you're hiding for the weekend that you're going to enter.
No, those are only two runners this week. It's been kind of light, so hopefully we'll have a big week next week.
All right. Well, you did break a maiden with long shorts on Thursday.
Yeah, long shorts is a two-year-old that was kind of precocious, and you know, we got him started once, and he had a real rough trip first time out, and come back and won. So, you know, we're excited to see where he goes. He was very game in his second race there, and kind of fended off a couple rivals throughout the race, and dug down deep to win. So, we're kind of excited about him.
That's a street boss for PTK. Very nice.
Yeah. Wow.
Doug, obviously, nice weekend, and next defends his Greenwood title, and we'll probably go for a third next year, and no matter what happens, whatever decision you make about, you know, the coming up November, continued success.
Well, thank you, Steve, and I appreciate you having me on.
No, this is a horse that has won a lot of fans, and he's going to be around. That's the best part. Nobody has to worry that he's going to be rushed off somewhere. He's going to come back, and as long as I imagine, as long as you can keep him healthy and happy, we'll have next in these spots for a couple more seasons.
Well, that's kind of the plan, and that's kind of the way we've mapped everything out. And, you know, at this point in time, the horse is just try to keep him healthy and sound and let him tell us when he's ready to run. And I think as long as we do those type of things, we'll be able to see him stick around for a while.
Well, now up to 13 wins and 23 starts and approaching $1.5 million in earnings. Next, Doug Cowens, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Steve.
We'll talk soon. Doug Cowens, folks, and next. And keep an eye on Injunction coming out of the dirt mile. Get him back to one-turn opportunities. So you got, you know, there's a hint. There was a hint of a chance, right, that we could see him. At Cup, right? Thanks to Doug Cowens. Earlier, of course, Dr. Allday, and visit with Eric. If you missed that, try to catch up either tomorrow on the replay or archive podcast in a little bit, right? Thanks to Jose D'Angelo as well. Right, talk to Jose before the break. Replay and archive, and 6 to 9 replay tomorrow. Going to work on that pick six carryover for Thursday. Wednesday get together. Sid and Dick Powell, Seth Merrow, of course, and Peter Rotundo. Junior is going to join us because he's getting excited and looking forward to the California Crown. He says there's some new betting innovations they're going to drop, so we'll check in with Pete tomorrow. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you in the morning.
sheep of the angels riding, riding down the line. We think there is a soul. We don't know. That soul is hard to find.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.